What's up, everybody? This episode of the Smoking Tire Podcast is brought to you by Bespoke Post and their boxes of awesome. Listen, as you get back outdoors to explore the world again, climb out of your hibernatory hole, go start seeing people, doing things, all the stuff you haven't done over the last 15 months, take Bespoke Post's box of awesome collections with you. These are collections for guys that are themed around different lifestyles and guaranteed to upgrade your life. Whether you're out taming the wilderness, riding motorcycles, traveling to luxury hotels, or taking your home bar to pro level heights, Bespoke Post only sends guys the best stuff every month. No matter what you're into, Box of Awesome has you covered. From style and grooming goods to barware, cooking tools, and outdoor gear, Box of Awesome has collections for every part of your life. The last awesome box that they sent me had a couple really cool folding knives in it. It had this thing, like a heat-resistant glove to move logs around in a fire. It had a really nice DOP kit, and it had this portable water treatment thing. So if you're in the woods, you can turn dirty water into clean water. It was cool. To get started and see what you're into, take the quiz at boxofawesome.com, and your answers will help them pick the right box of awesome for you. They release new boxes every month across a ton of different categories. It's a great gift idea for guys in your life. It's free to sign up. You can skip a month or cancel anytime. Each box costs only $45, but has over $70 worth of gear inside. So get 20% off your first monthly box when you sign up at boxofawesome.com. Enter code SMOKINGTIRE at checkout. That's boxofawesome.com with code SMOKINGTIRE for 20% off your first box. Boxofawesome.com, code SMOKINGTIRE at checkout for 20% off. All right, check me out. When you are shaped less than absolutely perfectly, it is really, really hard to find the right pants. And believe me, if anyone knows anything about not being shaped perfectly, it's me. I got big, meaty thighs. I got kind of an average waist given my height. I mean, obviously, I'm not thin, but proportionally. And then I have, like, relatively lean calves. It's, like, hard to, like, make pants fit right exactly, especially when you're talking about, like, cool loungewear. Like, and I love sweatpants, I love loungewear, but I'd rather be caught dead than wearing that stuff really outside of the house. And I don't want my neighbors to see my raggedy old sweats, you know? I want to be kind of stylish, right? So that's why we're checking out Public Rec this week. They make leisure wear in waist and inseam sizes because comfort starts with a better fit. You don't have to size up to make one thing work and then other things get too baggy. They got the all-day, everyday pants. It's a more stylish alternative to sweatpants and a more comfortable alternative to jeans. I'm talking about pants you can wear at a restaurant. You could probably get away with them at the office. You could certainly wear them out and chilling, and it doesn't seem like, oh, yeah, you're wearing sweatpants. It's like you're wearing stylish pants that aren't jeans. The all-day, everyday pants are really cool. They're great for lounging at home, looking all right for work, heading to the bar, or anywhere pants that it's a jean-like pant should be worn, but where you really wish you were wearing sweatpants comfort. You feel me? It's got all the things you want out of a garment. Breathable, stretchy, moisture-wicking fabric. You can wear them 24/7, and they stay looking brand new. They got zip pockets so stuff doesn't fall out. And they come in 9 different colors, one for each day of the week, and then some. They've got incredibly comfortable shorts, t-shirts, Henleys, polos, hoodies, jackets, and even golf gear. And they just launched a women's line as well. So now anyone listening can enjoy Public Rec's game-changing fabrics in their wardrobe. I will admit that when I'm climbing in and out of the old cars, going to Cars and Coffee Sunday morning, I have always kind of wanted to wear sweatpants. But I'm not really going to do it because people, like, take my picture when I go to this stuff, to be perfectly honest. So I keep it with the jeans. But now with Public Rec, I am going to rock these all-day, everyday pants that are not sweatpants for sure, but they are that comfortable. This is, you know what they're really good for? Seriously, road trips. On a road trip or flying, These are two activities where you really want to wear sweatpants, but if you've got to do stuff at the other end of the road trip or the other end of the flight, that could be a problem. That's why you really want to get into this public rec stuff, because if you got to do something comfortable like a road trip or a flight, but then work at the other end of it, that's what's really awesome. So as the world's opening back up, make sure you've got clothes that fit and are as flexible as your life is. Public rec rarely discounts, but right now they have an exclusive offer for Smoking Tire listeners. Go to publicrec.com. That's publicrec.com. Use promo code TIRE to receive 10% off. That's publicrec.com. Promo code TIRE for 10% off your order. And of course, we're brought to you by Tradecraft Farms, the best smokables, vapables, and edibles legally available in the beautiful state of California. These guys are on the cutting edge scientifically, whether it's CBDs and ointments and stuff like that. And they're also on the cutting edge of things you didn't even know had a cutting edge, like joints. They make 24-karat gold joints, white gold joints. They've got joints that are literally rolled in rose petals. It's the ballerest shit ever if you really wanted to roll up on somebody. Pun intended, people. Follow them on Instagram, Tradecraft Farms. If you're in the Los Angeles area, ask for them by name at your local dispensary or visit their brand store in Port Hueneme. It's a pretty badass store, frankly, if you're looking for an excuse for a drive. Tradecraft Farms on the gram, and tell them the Smoking Tire sent you. We would really appreciate that to keep this old freight train rolling on. All right, folks, on this episode, me and Zach gather back in the studio. He has been in Florida racing lemons at Sebring. I have been driving Acuras in Northern California, as well as I got a second go in the new GT3, plus van life. We talk about van life. It's a crew show on the Smoking Tire Podcast.
Wow.
Oh, good. Hello, everybody. What is happening? Nice to see you guys on a Saturday afternoon. It's been a pretty slow day here at the shop. I brought all my watches in to the studio because I was on this dude's Rico's Watch podcast earlier today, where I went through literally my entire collection watch by watch.
Whoa.
Which is the kind of thing you can only do on somebody else's show.
Yeah, yeah. If you do it on your own show, you're a douche.
You look like a real asshole. And so I didn't, Rico's Watches podcast. So I think that episode's coming out this week if you want to see me go through the whole collection. But we've got not a whole lot going on today because, both our press cars broke.
Yeah.
I had this Boxster and it broke. It had to go to the shop. I don't know what's wrong with it. Just bad things. There weren't any puddles. It didn't bleed out. It did not bleed out. No, the organs are still inside of the body, but it wasn't the kind of thing that you would keep driving. And so it's at the work. It went to the workshop, as you would say, because we've been talking to these fucking England people. And
diagnosis,
Zach's NSX also to the workshop.
Yeah. Like new NSX.
Yeah.
A lot of warning lights. I think it's a simple fix. I didn't cause the problem, which is very important to me.
Yeah.
But it does suck because I'm supposed to drive it and return it tomorrow or Monday and then write an article. And it's like, I can write about how the seats feel when stationary.
Yeah. And we were going to like roll heavy to like Cars and Coffee and shit. Yeah. Like it was going to be the whole thing. And now it's like, well, looks like Zach's going to drive the old NSX, mm-hmm. which, don't get me wrong. Nothing wrong with that. It's a 91 Acura Heritage car. It's a nice car.
Yeah.
But it was going to be that and the new one and now it's like, well, I'm going to be driving my car, which is fine. But it's not we thought we would have an actual flotilla of press cars.
Yeah, I was very excited about this.
When the occasional flotilla comes your way,
you know, you call your friends.
Right.
You know?
And now we're not like in a rowboat now.
No, no. But,
it's fine. And for the people, like, I'm doing an article for Road and Track that involves both NSXs. And to write that, it's helpful to drive both of the cars.
Yes.
So that's part of what the benefit was of tomorrow. But right. Now I'll roll the old one. You'll roll Countach, which will sound amazing.
Yeah. Clinton's downstairs washing it right now. Yeah. The level of dust on it was very shameful.
Yeah, I wiped my finger on the wing and I was like, oh, it looks like brake dust is everywhere. But
No, it wasn't brake dust. No, I know, it's dust not. Dust because I haven't driven it in 3 weeks. It's too long.
It's also good. Close to the wash bay, and I washed a muddy F-150 over there. Might have.
Well, oh, you mean why damage. Is it more dusty than normal? It's more dusty than normal because we've had the doors open because we've been doing our annual maintenance here.
Oh, yeah. True.
But did you see the filters? We changed the filters on the walls. The air filters, an air filter, just like in your car, it's over time. You know, you don't, if you, when you look at it, you okay, and then you close it back up, and then you look at it 6 months later, you can't really tell. But then if you see, you get a new one. And then you look at a brand new one compared to what you and you go, oh, fuck me.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we knew that we'd have to replace these air filters every 12 months, which is the maintenance schedule for the building. But the fires last year, all the fucking the fires, all that soot in the air, the sandstorm, you know, that we had, and the fact that those filters were on for the end of our construction as well and not just for the business. Right. You know what I mean? Because they put those filters in while they were still finishing up construction and they didn't have the fans on timers. They just ran them the whole time. So, like, you know, I don't have a real use cycle, but when I put the new filter in, which is if you go to the Westside Collector Car Storage Instagram, it shows a before and after. The new filters are, turns out, that's not a gray filter element in there. It turns out the filter element is fucking white. And I put up the post on the... Yeah, like, so look, that photo right there, that's the new ones. That's what they're supposed to look like. That's brand new. And by the way, these panel filters are made by Purolator. How fun is that?
Okay.
And then if you swipe right, it's not a great picture, but you could clearly tell that they are not white.
Wow. Yeah, it's a big difference. That is a dark gray.
It's a dark gray.
But it probably really cut down on the sweeping time the construction crew had to do when they built it. Like, hey, man, we just run the fans. This is a big vacuum. It's like Spaceballs. You know, right. It just pulls all the air out of the planet.
Mega made. We were, Christian and I were doing Living on the Edge, Aerosmith yesterday, which is a fucking, it only gets better if you break it down. It's one of the best vocal performances I've ever seen. But, you know the Mega Made timpanies? Like, dun, in Spaceballs? Yeah. We've gone dun, to Mega Made. Dun, 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 dun. That exact timpani sound is in Living on the Edge.
Oh, really?
It's the same pace, time, and tone. Dun, I swear dun, it's the same dun. Thing. The, like, in the Christian's doing the song, and they're doing, dun, and I just go, Mega Made. So we changed the filters. Yay. Thank God for filters.
Excuse me.
So that's very exciting. But we're down a couple of press cars.
It's a maintenance week for everything, basically.
Yeah, well, the lifts, you know, the lifts have been up for a year. So they need this maintenance. It's California and blah, blah, blah. Take all the cars off every lift, inspect it, lubricate it, put all the cars back on the lift. It's a whole thing. It's a pain in the dick. So it's been car shuffling.
Yeah. And then I left the NSX here last night because it hadn't repaired itself.
It was going to do that?
Like T1000.
Did they tell you that it was going to do that?
They said that they've seen these warning lights before and it was bad gas and maybe that's what it was. I turned it off. I unplugged the normal battery, plugged it back in, Christmas tree still. And I drive my car home and I get the battery light again. And I'm so mad at the shop I took it to for that thing because they didn't change.
On your car?
Yeah. Remember I had the whole alternator done?
Yeah.
And then when I drove out to Spring Mountain, I got that light for like half a second. And everyone that ran Sam's team are BMW techs. And they go, well, did they change the tensioner pulley? I was like, I don't know. And they looked at it and it's dirty. They're like, they didn't change that. So that's the last piece of the alternator system that they probably didn't change. But then it hadn't happened again. And then it turned on the way home after this long day with all these other problems. And it lasts 5 minutes and I just call the shop when I get home. I was nice. I left a message. But I was like, I hope you guys cover this under the warranty you said you have because, you know, what the fuck? Like, I'm not, I don't want to dox the company, the shop, but like, ugh.
Was it the place I'm thinking of?
No.
It's not.
It was a new place. Oh, I didn't go to Mark because he was far. I was like, this is easy. I'll go somewhere convenient.
That's a
mistake.
Problem.
Go to the person you trust.
It's worth the transit.
Always worth the transit.
It's worth the transit. Yeah, that's a tough lesson.
Yeah.
That sucks. Hopefully they cover it.
Yeah.
We don't have to talk shit about them on the podcast next week.
Right. Yeah, exactly. They'll be like, oh, that'll be $400. Like, oh, okay, that'll be a podcast.
That's going to be probably a week's salary for you eventually. But you went racing.
I did.
That's what I've been, because like, you pretty much got back and you're like, I have to tell you what happened. And I was like, we should probably wait for the show if you feel that way about it. So?
Okay.
What happened?
So I went and did Lemons.
Oh, you have a gallery? I didn't know you had a gallery.
I made a little gallery. So okay. I went and did the 24 Hours of Lemons, which you and I did. And it was 2013 when we did it. That's how long ago that was. Remember the Civic?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then, I mean, you ran Chump with the E30 later.
Yes,
and then I did
AER and some other shitty.
Right,
you kind some of improved shitty.
Improved shitty.
I went
shitty.
From shitty to yeah.
It
to
gets
shitty.
More and more serious as the number of letters go down.
Very slightly. It's just they reduce the amount of shit they allow you to glue onto your car. Pretty much.
Yeah.
All it is.
Yeah. Fewer art projects. Yeah. More race cars.
Yeah.
So this was actually the first Lemons event they've had with in-person driver meetings since COVID started. Like, they had a driver's meeting outside and masks and all that kind of stuff. But I guess before that, they would just been doing YouTube video. Teams show up, they tech your car, and then, like, you race. But the attendance has been pretty low.
No shit.
And I mean, and there were only 50 cars at this. And when we did it, it was 165.
50 cars? Yeah. 50 cars with Lemons is luxury racing.
Yeah.
That's real luxury. Like, there's a formula that a lot of these series use to determine how many cars they can sell on the grid. It's usually cars per mile.
Okay.
I happen to remember AER was 33. Lemons does not have a that type of rule.
Right.
They just arbitrarily determine what they feel like the max number
is. Well, because they calculate the attrition rate.
Yeah.
When we did it, I remember that the number of cars was over 150,
mm-hmm.
and it was so long that when they started rolling the cars out for parade lap before green flag, it was the entire length of the track,
yes.
And then it doubled up on itself
like a snake eating its own tail.
Right, exactly. It was nuts.
Yes.
So this was, you had less passing and interaction than we had at our race, but like still plenty of it because the best part about Lemons is like there's a shit car and then there's a fast car and you're interacting with both in the same corner, which is just nuts. It's so good.
Yeah. And so you were driving this 325.
So we had a 1990 325 that was given to my girlfriend's father-in-law for free by a friend of his. So, you know, free car.
In race car state or
no.
in? Okay.
In driveway state. Paperweight state. So it ran. And so him and his best friend does a lot of track driving at Sebring. He's got a GT3. His wife's got a GT4 track car. They do a lot of that. So they know the track. Yeah. They know how to drive. So they had the cage installed, fire suppression, all the safety shit. And they did a shakedown the week before the race at the firm. Mm-hmm. Just to like, let's see how this car works. And it worked fine. They said it felt slow, but, you know, soft, blah, blah, blah. It's a free car with free shocks and whatnot.
Was it an E? An I?
It was an I.
It's an I,
okay. 325i, just a, you know, normal coupe, not an IS, nothing like that. When we went to tech, it passed really quickly, and Brett, the owner, was really freaked out because he did Lemons last year in a Miata, and the cage didn't pass tech. And they grabbed a welder at night to try to help them, but they bought the wrong tubing and then welded that in, and it didn't pass. Like, they never got to race.
Well, that's
so he's gross. So yeah. Paranoid getting up there, and it passes, and he's elated, right?
Yeah.
And so Brett's going to drive first because he's the guy with the GG3, and he's like, I'm going to drive the track, and I will figure out how the car's handling and tell you guys how to drive the track when I get back.
Make notes.
We're like, that makes so much sense.
Did you not have, there's no practice day?
No, they didn't do, normally Lemons has a test and tune day, but they didn't this time. They didn't say why, but yeah, it's like, all right,
that's
we're all
super
going out cold.
Test and tune is like, I mean, we know what test and tune is, but like audition into testing and tuning your car, I take the opportunity that day to, if it's me, get either a press car or a rental car.
Ooh.
If it's you, get a rental car or your own car and run laps of the track in like just a regular car and just familiarize yourself. Like when I race AER or Chump or whatever, it's been rental cars or it's been like fairly basic press cars.
And they let you go out in a normal car on test and tune day?
Yeah. They tech'd fucking rental cars for me. And let me, if it's a street car that's safe belts and Bob put a helmet on and it's basically a track day.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's great.
They'll let you run the fucking whatever.
Oh, man. You're just
like,
yeah,
I want to learn the track. Like, okay. Is your battery secured? Fine. Have fun.
That's great.
Take this. I took a Nissan Versa out at NCM. I ran probably 40 laps. I must have run 25 or 30 laps around mid-Ohio in a Chevy Impala. It was better than you'd expect. Yeah.
I mean, that makes sense because they're like, look, you're gonna make the race safer if you learn it today.
Yeah.
And if you learn it during the test.
Yeah,
you know?
And there's street cars out there, and there's some people have brought like fast street cars for fun on that day, and people are testing their race cars too, and you know, it's whatever.
That makes sense.
I think I brought an A5 2-liter to New Jersey Motorsports Park.
And where'd you
make a video?
Ohio, right? Didn't you do
Mid
one
Ohio?
There?
Yeah, Mid Ohio twice. Once I had a press car, once I had no car, and then NCM Mid Ohio, NCM New Jersey Motorsports Park, VIR. I think that might be it. The Glen.
Oh, yeah.
And Road America.
Yeah. Where's the one where the transmission broke?
Mid-Ohio. Twice. Blew two transmissions.
Fuck.
An hour apart.
That's amazing. Wow.
So there you are.
So there I am.
The guy with the GT3 is about
is
to start the race.
On track.
On no practice.
He doesn't need practice. He knows the place.
Right.
I'm on comms, so I'm going to listen to him and on the track radio. And so he goes out, parade lap happens, green flag drops. On the green flag, as he's coming up the straightaway, he gets on the radio and he goes, I'm losing power.
Oh, God.
I'm like, well, the car is very slow. I mean, it's just a slow car. And he's like, no, I'm losing power.
Yeah.
And he doesn't complete a full lap. He has to exit the track at one of like the emergency exits.
Oh, no.
And he pulls in and... And when we went through tech, I drove the car through tech. It had like lifter tick, but it was like, all right, the lifter's tick.
Fucking old shitty BMW.
Exactly.
Like, you know.
So he pulls in and it's ticking, but it's a lot louder.
Yeah.
And I look at his son and I look at, you know, Sarah's stepdad who's built a lot of cars and we all just kind of go, it's the collective look of like, that's dead.
Yeah.
Like we have blown this engine. Rods, whatever it is, it's fucked.
Yeah.
It is fucked. So I started laughing because it's not the 10th lap or the 30th lap.
No, it's the first.
It's the first lap.
It's the very first.
Like, you can't not laugh at that.
No, I mean, it's not the same as an engine, but that first transmission that went on that in that race was the first lap of the race, and I started it.
Oh, shit.
Actually, it might have been the first or, like as I, you know, like the first. It was the fucking beginning, the first 5 minutes of 2 days of endurance racing, and I was in the car, and the clutch just sank to the fucking ground, and it was gone.
Oh, my God. And you don't even have time to get excited about how you're doing in the race, right?
No.
That's what's almost
laughable. I was excited that I made it through a clean start. You know, I duked it out with like one dude for 30 seconds. The starts are always a shit show. Made it through nice and clean. And then I was just about to settle into a lapping rhythm when no clutch. But no engine, that's fucking bad.
So we got no engine and we're in Florida.
And you've flown there.
I flew there.
That's the thing. When you fly to a race, that's a risk, man.
Well, when I flew there, knowing what Lemons is, I said to Sarah, I was like, look, this weekend will be fun because I'm either going to learn to drive Sebring or learn to wrench on something. And I haven't done that in a while. So whatever. Like, I'm going in real optimistic no matter what happens. But I mean, the other people, like, their hearts were kind of broken. So we all start calling shops looking for bearings. We're like, maybe the main bearings are blown. We're fixing this. Basically, everyone just goes, we're fixing this. Like, we've put all this work into this. We're still at the beginning of the weekend. What else are we going to do? Everyone's pretty handy with a wrench. So we start calling dealerships. I pretty much got laughed at by every parts shop. It was like, there's supply chain delays.
Yeah, yeah.
This BMW has an M20, which is like their workhorse six-cylinder. The M20 used four different kinds of main bearings that are different colors.
Depending on what year you were?
Yes, but the only way to find out what bearings it needs is look at a number that's on the crank on the crank. It's not in the VIN.
On the actual
on
crank
the fucking crankshaft.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
I call one place.
So it's not even about fixing. We're talking about a full-on engine rebuild at that point. If you're talking about
minimum,
replacing
replacing main bearings, which is
everything.
Yeah.
You've got to take everything off.
You have to take
leave the head in mostly one piece?
Yeah, yeah. You can do main bearings. Sometimes you can do it from the bottom of the car if you take the subframe out. You might have to pull the engine.
I didn't think about the bottom.
It's just the bottom bearing.
Okay.
But I call one BMW dealership. And I'm just like, hey man, we need these main bearings. And he goes, you should just K24 swap it. He doesn't ask what color or year. His first response is, you should change the engine to a different engine.
You know, I'm sure it's happened in Lemons before. And if you know about it, by all means, has anyone ever not just done an engine swap, but done an engine swap to a completely different manufacturer's Ooh. Engine during a Lemons race?
That's a good question.
Because it was our first or maybe our second Lemons race. I forget if Sonoma or Chuck Walla was the first or the second, but it was at Chuck Walla. It was at Sonoma.
Okay.
The guy pitted next to us in the paddock mm-hmm. had like a Ford Granada or some shit, like some giant mid-70s shit pile Ford. And he swapped an engine by himself in maybe 4 or 5 hours.
Holy crap.
It was, you know, but it was from the same car. It was one Ford 302 to another. It was, but like if someone went from like a V8 to a fucking American V8 to a Japanese inline six, like during a race.
That would be impressive. You need adapter plates for the transmission nice. And different motor mounts. At the best, you need those two things.
Well, if you had an engine and trans, maybe you could do a drive shaft.
That's a heroic fix for sure.
I don't know if anyone's ever done that during a race, but that would be extraordinary, wouldn't it?
That would be miraculous.
You'd get a lifetime achievement award at Lemons if you did something like that.
I think you'd get a plaque mounted on something, like on a junkyard somewhere, like on a, I don't know, a cherry picker or something.
Yeah.
So we quickly realize that getting bearings is out of the question, and then we go, all right, we need to find a motor. So now we need to find a motor. By the way, old BMWs, not that popular in Florida. You know what's popular in Florida? American trucks,
yeah.
Challengers, Chargers, that shit. Like,
Fuck.
Imports
are
not
popular. What
would
be harder, finding a motor or just getting another car and having a cage put in it right there?
That would require, that's a good question. Weld faster?
I mean, it might have been, you know, you get one committed welder and in Central Florida, you hand one welder $1,000. You got a roll cage.
Well, the guy that welded our cage in was with us because he wanted to just see the experience. He'd never welded a race cage before. He did a great job. He welds off-road cages, but never a Lemons one.
Okay.
And he passed with flying colors. That's a good question. But we found an engine through this Porsche tech that they work with, who comes into the story later. Engine is an hour and a half away.
Okay.
So one team drives there to get the engine. And then while Joey is going there to pick up the engine, we start
removing,
pulling the old engine. And this is obviously like 2 hours into it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a guy standing in the engine bay once we'd removed the engine.
So remind me, of your team, who is mechanically handy?
It's like a descending, there's a hierarchy. I would say Brett, who owns the GT3, is the highest because he used to run a repair shop like in the 80s. And he's built some cars and stuff. And then Joey has owned like 70 cars, done some engine swaps and stuff like that. And then Dwayne's a welder.
Okay.
And then there's like me.
Uh-huh.
Like, and what I told everyone's like, how good are you at wrenching? And I was like, I can't diagnose shit, but I can take stuff apart. Like, if you tell me what to do, I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Which I jumped on and did, and just, okay, like we need to take everything off of the engine. So I'll start on this side, Dwayne's on this side. What I learned at the end of this is that you should label things as you take them off.
Oh, yeah.
Because when it came time to put it back in, they're like, all right, Zach, where did all these plugs go? And I was like, oh, that's a good question.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to make little flags out of tape,
mm-hmm.
label them shits.
Yes.
You got to get the egg carton for all your bolts or something like that, a mm-hmm. muffin pan or the egg carton.
Both would have been very helpful.
Yeah, probably.
We didn't have any of that. I wasn't the only one who, like,
solo
we were just
cups,
going.
Labeled solo cups.
Oh, that's good. We did have a lot of those.
We used those.
That would have been very smart.
AER, they used
well,
the
you guys
labeled.
Had Bosey and...
Well, that's the thing. We had Bosey before he was, like, known as Bosey.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Bosey and oh, fuck me. Josh was the other dude's name. Yeah, they ripped through that shit. They were about it.
They
I
know.
Just kept feeding them and making more coffee.
Yeah.
I just kept making food. That's all I can do. Don't even trust me to hand you tools. I'll be at the grill. What do you want? You're taking out a transmission?
That's necessary.
You're going to need to eat. I will make that food.
I mean, that's a necessary, like, there's people that help keep the machine going,
yeah.
And then there's the machine. And so we get the engine, you know, pulled apart, and then we're waiting for this Porsche tech who's coming with a cherry picker and to help us on his day off. And he shows up, and like you're saying with Bozy, there is a huge difference between the speed at which, like, hobbyists work and techs work.
Yeah.
He showed up, didn't really ask many questions, and just starts doing shit and, like, crawling under the car, the way they sit, the way they move. And, like, he had things unbolted that we couldn't get to. He's got, dude, his crazy, crazy set of Snap-on tools, like, with every wrench, flexible everything. And I mean, this normally has it like in a cart or something, couldn't fit in his truck, but he's just blazing through all this stuff and helping us out. The cherry picker he brought, which is from whatever business, has a leaky seal.
Uh-oh.
So if you don't keep cranking on it, it sinks. And so we had someone like, you just sit there like you were pumping oil by hand back in the day, or like one of those hand ox carts
just
on
constant,
a fucking train track.
Constant pumping,
or the engine would sink back into the car.
Oh my God. Well, if you got it out, could you just let it sit on some tires or something?
Yeah, like, once we got it out, we set on tires, and then we start swapping over like the alternator from the old engine to the new engine.
Yeah, like how much engine did you buy?
We bought a complete engine that a guy had been running in his 2002 for a long time and had recently pulled out.
Okay.
And he had a video of it running. He is like, I drive this car a lot. This engine works. And we just trusted him about that. And we saw the video and we're like, okay, like he's, you know, I guess it was just a judge of character.
Yeah, like what other choices do you have?
Zero.
There you are.
Zero.
Yeah.
We called. We had one other shop that was like, we might have an engine. But they were closed. They were gonna go there and open it, but you know, could they test it?
Yeah,
no. And
yeah.
This guy goes, "Look, here's a video of it running. I have six hobby cars. Seemed like a trustworthy adult, basically."
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so we put faith in that. But we swapped over, you know, starter, alternator, things that we needed. I did the thing again where I pulled brackets off of the old engine, and then they're like, "All right, how does this go on the new one?" I was like, "Oh, I didn't take a picture." It's been the last like 20 minutes trying to figure out how to put these fucking brackets. I learned a lot about paying attention and taking photos on this thing. So we get the engine in. I mean, Christian, the Porsche tech, helps a huge amount, obviously. And at 10:30 at night, we fire it up. And the guy that, you know, put the most work into this whole thing is just so happy. Like, it starts up and it's got lifter tick and it's throwing smoke out of like an exhaust leak, but you know, it revs fine.
Yeah.
And all the plugs worked. I found all the plugs. I put them in the right place. It's not leaking any fluids.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. So that's great. We're like, all right, we're going
so
racing tomorrow.
Engine.
We've got an engine, you know, everything's fine. And then at 8 a.m.
Is it better than the old? I mean, obviously the old engine's dead, but when the old engine worked, is the new engine better than the old engine? Or is it a downgrade?
I think it's like exactly the same. There's so many versions of the M20. You know, there's like 323, 325, 328, IS or not.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's like slightly different cams, slightly different displacement. This was basically the same. It had like a black intake instead of silver, but I think someone painted it. So it's not like, you know, it's not an SR20 black top.
Right,
it's
right,
like spray paint top.
Yeah, yeah.
So in the morning, we get there at like 7:30, and the car's chilling. And there's a puddle of power steering fluid under the car. And so we're like, well, you know, the engine's not broken, but we have to fix this.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to find washers to put on to help seal it. Because someone says, well, that's supposed to have two washers. And yesterday we could only find one washer. I'm like, well, where the fuck are we going to find a power steering? Like, it's a really weird shape. So as I pull the lower hose off, it almost slips and falls into the bath of fluid we have under it. And I just go, you think that other washer fell in this puddle last night when someone took it off? And just Brett looks at me and just goes, yup.
Yeah.
So we had to go dump that out. Like, luckily on the track, they have one of these places you can dump oil and stuff.
Yeah.
Sure enough, washer at the bottom of it.
Oh, fuck.
Like, very lucky, very good guess.
Good call.
So we fixed that. And then I went out on track at 8:30. Green flag drops.
This is for day two.
This was day two. We raced 0.4 on day one.
Yeah,
so day two, green flag drops. And we actually ended up driving Without issue, all the way until 30 minutes before the end of the race. The engine ran fine. Like, lifter tick wasn't a problem. We beat the shit out of it. I over-revved it. Everybody over-revved it by accident, downshifting.
Why did everybody over-rev it? Because the gearbox was just vague and shitty? Or
The gearbox, just being very aggressive. The car is in gear, you've never seen a shifter move so much from side to side, dude. It's like a fucking football player trying to get through the D-line.
Yeah, it's in gear.
It's moving as much as if it was in neutral.
Ooh,
literally. Like, you're touching your thigh and your passengers, dude. It was crazy.
Worse.
Your brain just had to remember, like you were, you know, back in the day, remembering where water was. Like, you remembered where third was, and you just put your hand there and
vaguely.
Hoped you were right.
Yeah.
Everyone, I over-revved it because coming off
That's
of
like
the
driving
back straight.
Driving a Porsche 914, by the way. Porsche 914s have the worst,
mm-hmm.
the worst shifter linkage in probably the history of sports cars.
Yeah, you can't.
You cannot find third
terrible.
Gear. Yeah, first and third are awful close to each other.
You can't feel the like gates. What's
it's
that car
so
needs a fucking gate like Ferrari? Remember us saying like if you can't find the gates, yeah. if you can't find the gears, put a gate on it.
Yeah, yeah.
So I over-revved it going from fourth to third at the end of the Sebring straight, the back straight, which is really, really long.
Uh-huh.
And I'm so used to new cars that have rev limiters.
Do you mean by downshifting or by missing fifth?
No, by downshifting.
Oh, okay, yeah,
slowing
yeah.
down, four to three, and just zinging it to seven and going, oh, that's right, there's no fuel cutoff in this car.
Yeah.
There's no red line, really.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a red line, but it's mechanical.
It's supposed to be like six,
64,
pretty much. 64. It's
64? Oh. I think 64, we were shifting at... Oh, no, you're right. It's six. We're shifting
sure
at 58.
Six, yeah.
But it'll go to seven.
If you make it.
It'll go to seven. I don't know, man. It was slow. It had a lot of grip. It had a lot of body roll. That is a bumpy fucking track.
What
Holy
a shithole
shit.
That place is, isn't it?
It's
a terrible racetrack.
I mean, yeah, if you compare it to anything that's prettier or has more elevation, like, it is. It's racing is fun, and driving on a track is fun, but it's
sure.
basically flat.
Yeah.
Except for the
it
bumps.
It meets the basic requirements of track.
Yeah. Or airport.
Anyone who's like, oh, yeah, it's fun. It's like, well, this would describe pretty much any racetrack. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
That's true.
It does meet the baseline requirements of racetrack. But, like, it's a shithole. The surface is horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I'm sure there's a reason they haven't fucking paved it. But, like, it's just a terrible racing surface.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. Why haven't they replaced the concrete with tarmac? I don't know if it's, like, that's the character of it.
I talked to Lee Keen later. I don't want to race on bumpy surfaces. Just,
no.
There's no...
Turn 17, which is off the back straight, you know, the famous turn.
Yeah, very long.
Lee said there's three different ways you can take it. Nobody has ever really gotten it right. And... I mean, I have pictures on a different album of, like, the car is leaning and bouncing at the same time.
Yeah.
It's doing a whole lot of motion.
Yeah, there's in the canyons where we drive here in Malibu, there's a road called Payuma that has three carousels in it. And one of the carousels has a fucking series of waves right in the middle of it.
Right.
That reminds me of the Turn 17.
Yeah.
I drove Sebring once. It's a terrible track.
Yeah, it is. In the hierarchy of tracks, it is not great.
Yeah.
I mean, what's fun about Lemons or any racing, if there's a lot of classes in it, is you're passing and being passed, so it makes any surface interesting because there's so much going on. Like, you have so much sensory input and
so much, in
turn one, where you have to duck in next to the wall, like, the driving line, the apex is basically get one mirror's width away from the inside wall
mm-hmm.
and go under a sign if you have a low enough car. Like, it's pretty exciting. And I did a double pass there. Between two cars, like, one
that's
was going
fun.
Slow and one was going slower. Like, that shit's exciting.
Well,
it's
sure,
so fun.
But yeah, that could happen at any track.
Very true.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
mixed class racing is fun. It keeps you on your toes.
Very much.
You gotta look up front, you gotta look behind. You gotta be aware of what's coming from both directions.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's fun to be in mixed class racing and be in one of the middle classes.
Yeah, we were in B class. They wanted to put us in A because they said E30s usually do very well. And we were like, you don't understand.
Yeah.
Us and our E30 is not a cheater car. Like, it's slow as shit.
Yeah.
So on the straights, there was someone out there with a Cooper S that I couldn't catch on the straightaways. But in all the corners, I was like half a car length off their ass. And eventually they gave me a point by, but we had a fun little battle for like three full laps
mm-hmm.
where they would just inch away and I was like, God damn it.
If you have a much higher cornering speed than them, you could mentally find a way to set up a pass over three or four corners
right.
where you actually backed off them and used that high cornering speed over a series of corners that would keep your inertia higher and allow you to overtake right at the exit or possibly dive bomb the entry
100% to another corner. Yeah. I kind of forgot about that chess move, to be honest, because yeah. I haven't done this in 7 years.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, I was like, oh, that's right, I could have.
I can, like, set those passes up.
Instead yeah. of just being up their butt, like, right. get out of my fucking way.
I know, yeah.
Yeah, it was, you know, there were some science experiments. There weren't as many as when we did the race, when there was, like, remember the slot machine car that yeah. had, like, three spinning wheels with numbers on the back? Like, there yeah. wasn't any of that, but there were some creative, like, external turbos. Someone turned a Porsche 944 into a Chrysler Sebring. By putting a Sebring nose on the front, because they said if you race a Sebring at Sebring, you get like free entry. So, you know, someone did that, but they had,
I talked with Jay Lamb about doing the 12 hours of Sebring, which would have been an all Chrysler Sebring spec race at Sebring.
That'd be fun. It'd be
yeah.
fun.
Yeah.
There was someone had a real Sebring there. I forgot how long that car is. With a cage in the top down, it looks like a Suburban that you've turned into a convertible. Holy yeah. crap, dude. Yeah, this people had their turbo sticking out of the hood.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
944 with like a Sebring front end.
Well, it's nice to see fun engineering. I stopped being into the joke cars after like a while, you know, like affordable racing, shitbox racing. Like, I'm about that. But like, I kind of want to feel like I'm in a serious race a little bit.
Right. I can totally understand.
You know what
that.
I mean? Like, yeah. Lemons is like, there's people that will build cars that are like ridiculously slow and they'll just be lapping at like 20 for like hours. Yeah. And you're like, all right, come on. Let me, like, you know, you got to have some kind of pace here.
Yeah. Someone incredibly broke a 2003 Crown Vic and it was doing that 20. I was like, how did you hurt this car? Yeah. I thought they were, you know, totally invincible.
What have you done?
Exactly. I don't know. It was going slow. But everyone else, I think, took it a little more seriously because the attendance was low. It only brought out people that, like, really wanted to race. The Class A was won by a 350Z, which was, like, the nicest car out there and a very sturdy vehicle.
Yeah.
But that was good. And then there was, like, an HHR that was super fucked and had lots of problems, and then like a C4 Corvette that was uh-huh. quick and then broke. I mean, a lot of people were breaking stuff. It was only 85 degrees. It wasn't like 100, but I think it was just, it's trying. Everyone's yeah. buying
Sebring's
shitty
a tough
cars.
Place because it's just really abusive on cars.
Right. Yeah. 30 minutes before we were done, one of the bolts on our rear shock vibrated out. And so we got black flagged because they're like, hey, something's hanging off your car.
And it was your shock.
And it was a shock, which I, you know, after all cars, I'm like, you don't need all the shocks. You can keep racing. But the rest of the team was like, let's be done.
Yeah.
It's 30
yeah.
minutes till the end of the race.
Yeah.
Let's just call it.
All right. Well, the car survives to race another day.
Car. Yeah. They're going to do a bunch more races with it. They're going to keep this engine in it because it works. And, you know, the brakes were good until they go away. I don't know, the shifter bushings, I hope they work on that a bit. But it's pretty impressive, these cars, as old as it was, it still has such good steering feel compared yeah. to so many new cars. Like, it just really
communicative. Yeah, racing an E30 is like, oh, this is fucking nice.
Yeah.
You know, I think the wheels aren't too big. You know, the tires aren't too big. You don't need an over-boosted system to fight the gyroscopic, you know, and inertia of the wheels. You know, it's and you also have a relatively, I don't know what you put on there for the race, but a relatively large diameter steering wheel, which allows yeah. you some. It's not necessarily what you want to, like, look cool. Oh yeah, you kept it pretty big. But it gives you a lot of room to find the balance between, you know, grip and slide.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're right. Going down like 1 inch on the diameter of the wheel would have quickened things a little bit
yeah.
and would have helped. That's true. There's not, the corners there are really flowy. You're, even with the big wheel and the old rack, like, you're still going just 90 degrees at the most, unless yeah. something goes wrong. But this car's so slow, like, there's no oversteer.
Yeah.
If you got oversteer, I don't know what you did.
That was actually kind of what bummed me out about the racing with that E30 at VIR, was that it was too slow. It was nice to drive, but it was too slow to power oversteer. You know, you could initiate an oversteer under the braking or something, but, like, even if you did, you couldn't maintain it,
right.
even if you went flat.
And it was going to catch it so quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
So that was, you know, that's why power is good.
Yeah, I think that's why, like, going to Chump or something else is is so awesome. Or just start with a faster car. These guys with the 350, they bought it from a drifter for $1,200. They found out it had formerly been turbocharged, which they weren't told. And then they're like, we've been running it. This is our first race. They won. It ran fine. I don't know. They seem like they're probably going to be the new 240/E36. They're bulletproof and they're cheap.
Yeah.
And that thing was the nice car. You know, usually they penalize that, but because the team put on a theme and they wore Dragon Ball Z like costumes and shit, they waived their penalty and then they were allowed to win. Another really fast car though was full cheater mobile. This thing starts up and it's like, who just fired up a fucking stock car here? And we look over and it's this old Thunderbird, like an 80s Thunderbird. And it's gray and it's got the little like
the one that kind of was the same as the Cougar and the Mark 7?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
It's that one. It's gray, but it's got camber to it and it's got like 17-inch wheels.
Yeah.
And
well, those are Fox body vehicles. So anything that goes in a Fox body Mustang can go in one of those T-Birds.
So the story with this car we found out was this team was running a former dirt oval car for a couple years and just destroying people. And the guy that owns it is like 70-year-old former, you know, dirt oval tech, like old racing, knows his shit. And Lemons finally said, you can't run this car anymore because the cage that you guys have for dirt oval is so sturdy. If you hit someone, even if they have a Lemons cage, like you're probably going to go through them.
Yeah.
Because they're just, it's a full tube chassis. It's two bars, da da da. So they go, okay. So they take the engine out of that car, they put it in this Thunderbird, and then the guy builds his own cantilever suspension, like Von Gittin's RTRX.
Yeah, yeah.
So the suspension's inboard, and it's all tucked under this thing, and like, I don't think they can really, actually no, their team is called Penalty Lap, because they're like, okay, you can run that, but here's your 400 penalty laps. But the thing was so fucking fast, and sounded unfair. It was really cool, and the engineering's really cool, but I met the guy's wife randomly, and she's like, yeah, they gave us all these penalty laps. It's hard, we just can't catch up. And I'm like, oh, how sad for you.
You brought an 800 horsepower car. Like,
yeah, it passed everything on the straightaways. It just, I think the 350Z ran longer. And because they broke apart at some point. But
that's
pretty
funny.
Cool.
Back in the day, there was that car, IROC Maiden.
There was an
IROC that had like a fucking NASCAR motor in it and a Jericho crash box transmission and aero. I mean, it was pretty wild. It was cool. I like a good cheater car.
Yeah, me too. That thing, it had devil horns, and it would fly past us when we were racing at Sonoma.
Oh, what happened to that picture?
Oh, that was weird. Where'd it go?
Oh. Well, you typed Urco, but there's a picture if you hit the image. There it is. What the fuck?
I just
clicked
it. That's weird.
You literally clicked one image, and that's bullshit. And you typed Urcock.
I did.
Also. For some
reason,
you're like bad at Googling things, actually.
I'm usually pretty good at it.
No,
but
it's like pressure.
All right.
The picture next to it where it's on the banking of Texas World Speedway. Yeah, it's got like a giant like Can-Am wing. It's
jeez.
Very funny.
Yeah. it's cool like the race engineers that come out and do this for fun and then just destroy fools. But so I kind of had my wish. I got to race for a day and I got to learn to replace an engine.
I got both.
I was in a great mood. I just thought it was hilarious that we replaced an engine in a parking lot.
Yeah.
With kind of minimal tools. So, you know.
Yeah, what was the heaviest duty tool you had? Did you have any air tools at all?
No. No air tools. When Christian showed up, he brought like the ratchet wrenches. Before that, we had a small Craftsman like in a suitcase wrench set and then like some hammers and stuff. But you know, most of the things on there were just like a 13 mil or a 15, except the transmission, which had three different kinds of bolts, which was stupid. It was just like getting to those tight places. We didn't have all the crazy extensions.
That's why the tech guy was able to get to all of it, because he had all the extensions needed.
He literally had a 3-foot long extension, a 2-foot extension, and you know, some of the things he's back at the diff.
Yeah.
And then threads the fucking wrench all the way to the engine, and I'm like, well, like, oh, that's how you do it? He's like, that's how you do it. Like, he knew the tricks.
Yeah,
it was impressive.
That's why home wrenching sucks balls. You don't know, because it's like, you're not going to buy that tool. You're not going to know that.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, by the way, you just stand at the other side of the car to turn this wrench.
Yeah. I had never thought of that. I was like, no, you get the box wrench. He's like, no. So you stand in Sarasota, get the extension, and then thread that through. Like, okay. I mean, that's why when he got there, he was moving at 4 times the speed we were, and we all just kind of helped from that point on until he bolts it in. He's like, okay, now you do this, you do this, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yep, ricin.
Yep, lemons.
Ricin, lemons.
Super lemons.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What is the other things? Well, our cars are, I brought this out because I read this. Someone recommended it on Twitter, and this is awesome. This is like a 75-page book. It was written in the 70s, and it's called The Basic Laws of Human Stupidity.
I like the title.
It's like it's written like a thesis, like a college, like a paper.
Okay.
And there's five basic laws of human stupidity, and they can be plotted on, and people can be plotted on this chart that we have here.
Gotcha.
So the five, and I'll just read the five basic laws, and the book expands on each law. Rule number one, always and inevitably, everyone underestimates the number of stupid individuals in circulation.
True.
All right. Because we're good. We assume that rational people are also, or we assume that everybody's rational because we're rational.
Right.
Not the case. Law number two, the probability that a certain person be stupid is independent of any other characteristic of that person. And this book goes into a lot of detail on that. So basically what he's saying is if you take any group of people, divide people however you want, men, women, black, white, lawyers, teachers, politicians, astronauts. Pick your division. Constant. The probability is constant, no matter how you divide people.
Interesting.
That the probability that a certain person is... This argues that being stupid is an inherited, is not nurture. That's fully nature.
Okay.
Okay. So independent of any other characteristic.
And regardless of education,
race,
almost?
Yeah, wow. Independent of education. You find the same. And he does the study that he talks about in this. He starts with, like, I think it's like fast food workers, works his way up to college students, then college professors, and eventually Nobel Prize winners.
Wow.
Constant.
Wow. Okay. That's great.
A stupid person is defined as a person who causes losses to another person or to another group of persons while himself deriving no gain and even possibly incurring their own losses. Okay? And that's how you go to the chart, right? So here's the chart. So the chart is plotted on an XY axis where at the X axis is... If you start from zero, the x-axis is me. I'm mm-hmm. the actor. I'm okay. the person, right? I can have a net gain or a net loss by my action. The y-axis, the vertical axis, is you, your other person or group of persons, net gain or net loss.
Okay.
So, top right quadrant. If I have an action that causes me to gain and you to gain, then I am an intelligent person. If I do an action that causes me to have a loss and you to have a gain, I am a hopeless person. Okay? If I do an action that causes me to have a gain and you to have a loss, mm-hmm. I am a bandit.
Hmm.
And if I do an action that causes me to have a loss and you to have a loss, I am stupid. This is fucking sound, isn't it?
It really is.
This is
I like it. I like that a lot.
Because it doesn't define stupid as, well, the thing that came out of his mouth didn't quite sound right. It didn't define stupid as they're not educated. Your actions are hurting me
mm-hmm.
and either not helping you or possibly even hurting you.
Right. Yeah.
Which...
that's really funny.
Which goes to the vaccination discussion on the last show.
I mean, it can go to lots of things.
Yeah. Law number four. So that's how you explain who a stupid person is, law number three. Law number four, non-stupid people always underestimate the damaging power of stupid individuals. In particular, non-stupid people constantly forget that at all times and places and under any circumstances that to deal with or associate with stupid people infallibly turns out to be a costly mistake. Meaning that 100% of interactions with stupid people by intelligent people cost intelligent people.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Law number five and the final law. A stupid person is the most dangerous type of person. A stupid person is more dangerous than a bandit. And that's because the book argues that a stupid person is stupid unpredictably and randomly. And their behavior, their stupidity, literally has not only no limit, but is completely unpredictable, whereas a bandit's behavior is more
usually
predictable.
Motivated by accruing resources.
It might be malice, but it's rational malice. Mm-hmm. I need $20 and I'm going to steal it from Zach.
Right.
As opposed to stupid, which is
I'm going to light $20 on fire.
YOLO.
Yeah, YOLO. Yeah.
Now, this book is like 80 pages long. I read it in about fucking an hour, and I was riveted.
I will definitely read it. That's very funny.
I cannot recommend this highly enough. And it actually almost made me feel better. It made me feel like just, you know, it's all shit. Like, you know, like you're just, there's just going to be people. They're it's not,
did you see there are people carrying gasoline in trash bags? Like,
that photo was debunked as being old.
The
2 years ago.
Okay.
But there were people hoarding gas.
Well,
you know.
I think hoarding gas, if there's a gas shortage, you fill up a tank. But like, even if 2 years ago, I guess let's say there were dumb people, because I want to know, like, what's their end game with the bag? Do they think you just tie the bag and then set it outside and it stays full like a waterbed?
I don't know.
Is it going to eat through the plastic? If someone's a petroleum engineer, please let me know. Because in my head, I think you just, wouldn't it eat through the plastic and then just...
Yeah, I don't know what you do with it on the other end.
Right.
Of the,
that's,
of
there's
the
a
thing.
Lack of forethought there.
Right, right. I mean, maybe
what
you
that person
empty
has
it
done,
into a bucket and then hose it into
the
car.
You
got to
do that. But why didn't you just bring the bucket in the first place?
Because getting it home in the bucket
would be very hard. No, it's because you're stupid. Because you're taking gas from you. I'm taking gas from you, and then later I'm going to lose it in my lawn.
That's
and
a stupid
I fuck
person.
Me.
That's
no, a stupid
for sure.
Person.
Yeah, the gasoline hoarder is definitely a stupid person.
Yeah, this is so funny.
It's a very interesting thing to think about.
Yeah, I like it.
Right?
I'd really like it.
Because it defines a person by their actions and mm-hmm. not by anything else. Not by race, sex, education, anything else. Mm-hmm. It's literally, and what I love about this book, the last like 10 pages of the book are empty charts where you can plot people, where if you know somebody, you can put their actions
on. Oh, I could do that for my wrenching, because what I did by not labeling is I fucked me and I fucked them out of 15 minutes. Yeah, absolutely.
So anyway, I mean, I was recommended by this from one of my favorite Twitter follows. It's by Carlo Cipolla, and this was written in 1976.
Wow.
And it was called A Masterly Book by Nassim Taleb, author of The Black Swan.
He's a very smart guy.
Yeah, yeah.
That's great.
Fucking great way to spend an hour.
Yeah.
I recommend it. All right, questions? Let's get to them if you have them. Get to the Super Chat for the next 5 minutes. We're not exactly in a rush. I mean, our press cars are broken, so here we are. I felt so bad for the cat. I was here for 15 hours yesterday, and Hannah's out of town.
Right.
And I felt so bad for the cats just at home once it got dark and shit. Like, ugh.
Well, don't they hang out with each other? Isn't that like the benefit of it?
I mean, they do. It's better than one cat that's left alone, certainly. But, you know, they're like people.
They're like people.
They were, when I got home, they're like, oh, fuck have you been?
Furniture's rearranged.
Time
to
fucking eat over here.
We made some changes.
Yeah.
awkward.
Yeah. But did you see my neck? You see my neck hickeys?
Yeah, I got questions. So does Hannah.
About that? So that's Cricket. So Cricket, our kitten, normally on a normal night when my wife and I are in bed together, Cricket like nurses on Hannah's neck, like literally sucks on her neck
I need to write something in it.
And she's been doing it the whole time. She does it for like a half hour before bed, and then eventually she'll fall asleep like that. She'll just pass out like that. And then she'll wake up in the middle of the night, the cat, and remember that Hannah's neck is right there. She'll wake up and go, and then go back to it, and after about 30 seconds, just fall asleep again, just like that. And that'll happen.
Does she think it's like a milk jackpot that's going to hit
one of
these days?
It's got to be that she was taken away from her mother or something
too
early. I thought she would be over this by now, but she's not.
Wow.
So Hannah's out of town, so I got it. It's fucking, I have hickeys.
Yeah, you do.
Proper hickeys on my neck, like a teenager.
You've got like four, you got more than, you have like seven little red marks.
Right.
Wow.
I do. And so here's, here's
really not that close to the nipples either.
No. It's,
I mean,
look.
This cat is knocking on a wall and thinks it's a door.
And I'll put this
here. You go to
go to three.
Which one do you want?
Three.
Okay, three.
That's three.
Oh, sorry, there you go.
That's three. Phone. here's me and here's the cat. It's sucking up my, off my neck in the middle of the night. Isn't that crazy?
That's one of the weirder things I've ever heard about.
Yeah, it's
an animal
really,
doing.
Really strange. Yeah.
Again, super off base. Cat is just.
She's a weird cat. Cricket's a strange cat. Yeah. So she's a. Maybe she's because she's black, like black. Or maybe she's because she's like. She was like the last one of the litter, you know, and she was the left. She was like left behind.
She's the weird artsy cat.
Yeah, you know, she looks like the Janine Garofalo, really, of cats.
Yeah.
Weerenfeld, 1990. Thoughts on the rainbow Rolexes? And also, any chance we could get Kamisa to bring along Derek Tam Scott mm-hmm. at some point? Who's that? Who's
They host or used to host the Curmudgeon podcast together.
Oh.
And then when Jason was doing all the shows on EC Me, or all the videos on EC Me, I should say, Derek Tam Scott also does stuff there. He knows his shit, super knowledgeable.
Never met him. Never. I don't even know if I've ever heard his name, but absolutely. Come on, Kamisa, if you're out there, bring him on down. We're about it. Rainbow Rolexes are interesting. If you, Zach, want to Google a picture of a rainbow Rolex Daytona, they're very expensive. They're gold. And they don't just have diamonds. They are literally surrounded, excuse me, the bezel, one of those, either one, has diamonds in a rainbow gradient all the way around.
Whoa.
Yeah. That can't be right. Is that really only $55,000? That shouldn't be that cheap.
Really?
That should be $155,000.
Whoa.
I don't know why that is listed as being that. See, look, the rest of these are, the rest of these are all like really, really expensive.
Well, this one's pre-owned, $29,000
steel. You know why? It's probably aftermarket diamonds.
Oh, okay.
That's why.
Not original.
Those should really be like, if you go, if they're real, like factory diamonds, they're over $100,000.
Wow.
You know, it's a thing. You know what I mean? It's flashy. It's peacocky. It says a whole bunch of things about the person who owns it.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If I saw somebody wearing it, would I be like, what a shitbag? Like, no. I'd be like, holy shit, you've got one of those. Like, that's crazy. But, like, you know, that's real flashy.
Yeah, very.
You gotta be a certain type to rock it. And honestly, even if I was rich enough to be wearing something like that, I'm not sure I would.
I don't think this is your taste.
It's not
like, it's very showy. I will say I'm impressed by like the color changes of, is there like paper behind the diamonds and that's where the color comes from?
No, they use colored stones.
I mean, that's a pretty good job.
They use colored stones, yeah. Fucking work is unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's not that something like that isn't necessarily, quote, worth the money. You know, that watch is either made of solid gold, solid white gold, or solid platinum.
Jeez.
And it's going to be set with, you know, hundreds of diamonds. So, yeah, I mean, it's pretty crazy.
Wow.
Low Strife says the best walkie-talkie for car-to-car comms. So I don't know if we're the best people to talk to about that, because the walkies that we use are the ones that, like, the filming industry use. They're the Motorola, yeah. You know, construction site, mm-hmm. commercial grade. They're like, you know.
They're like the U200 or something like that.
Yeah. They're like the ones that you see professional people using.
Yeah.
Like the Motorola commercial ones. They may be more expensive than you want to spend, but they fucking work. I mean,
yeah.
They take a beating. The range is pretty good. Nothing works
pretty good.
Around walls.
Right.
Like nothing. Nothing goes through a mountain.
Yep.
So, you know, when we were doing the California BDR and we were in the desert, we could be, I don't know, half mile, a mile probably, and they work good. Maybe even a little more than a mile out in the desert. But like in the canyons, it's more like quarter of a mile.
Totally.
Yeah.
If you have line of sight, like you said, you can be a mile away. But I remember I was maybe an eighth of a mile behind you, but you went around a corner and there was a mountain between us and like it got staticky really quick.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you just need to decide what are you using them for? Like if you're doing them for car-to-car comms in the canyons, how far apart are you going to be? Are you trying to like be a lookout so someone can, I don't know, drive however you want when there's no cars on the road? Or are you just trying to talk to each other and stay together? If you're staying relatively together, you can go with cheaper walkies. But if you need to have like real distance, then yeah, spending the money is worth it. And the battery life's really good. And if you want the next step above that, what we used to use for tangent vector, is you get the good walkies that we have, but you can get a custom frequency made. Mm-hmm. That's basically the most advanced you can get and the most range without having to get a ham license. So that's kind of the levels.
Yeah, so it literally, when you do that, you won't get any interference right. from any other radio users. Oh, is that...
Clinton's out.
Is it time to go? Okay, bye. Thank you, dude. Cool. It's 3 o'clock. Time to close the shop.
Oh, nice.
How about that? Daniel Berman says, how did the transition from Top Gear to the Grand Tour go so bad? Quite the fall from grace. Well, first off, I think whether it went well or bad is something of a matter of judgment.
Mm-hmm, of course. It's very subjective.
Those guys earned a living. They've made multiple seasons of television. I don't know if Amazon is happy with their performance or not, but I mean, if you didn't like it, and I saw some of it, and I liked a little bit of it, but I didn't like most of it, that's a judgment call. So I wouldn't necessarily say, like, people said, like, Top Gear US failed, like, with Tanner and Rut and Adam, but, like, they got 7 seasons out of that show. Like, that's a success by anyone's measure.
Right.
I think that the presence of, quote, the producers in Top Gear as actually an antagonistic force, with the BBC producers being an actual antagonistic force, made for funny moments. That once they got a monster check and a blank page and they just was like, do whatever you want, with no antagonistic force opposing, I think that's worse for creativity.
Yeah, because it's fun, you know, if you're the audience and they're like, oh, the producers want us to do this, like you as the audience are rooting for the team you
right.
like, and you go, the fucking producers are making them do this. And
right.
and adding conflict, it's more fun. Now they have to overcome something. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's like the hero's journey, which is like writing 101.
Right.
If you don't have that anymore where they can just go do an awesome thing, I think I liked about 50% of the Grand Tour, and some of it they had that adversary, like with the boats. The adversary with the boats was this ocean sucks
right.
and everyone is in pain and we have to overcome this thing together in these things we've bought. Or when they buy shitty cars, they're all trying to overcome the shitty cars together.
Right.
But what I didn't like the last season when they did the off-road adventure thing was, one, it seemed really, really similar to the one they did the season before, and two,
it was super contrived.
It was very contrived. There was a lot of like moments where you're like, yeah. I know what's about to happen. I know it's fake, and I'm yeah. calling the shot, and then it happened.
And in the first season too, they made such a thing about not being able to use the Top Gear IP, and they did shit that got, it was like real inside baseball in terms of they didn't have the producers to be antagonistic with. What they had was they had to leave all the Top Gear shit behind.
Mm-hmm.
All the jokes, the phrases.
Yeah.
You couldn't call the news, so they called it Conversation Street. Shit like that, where they were trying to do with these gags that danced around them not using the Top Gear trademarks, but they were like one-time throwaway gags that lasted an entire season.
Well, that's why
celebrities getting blown up over and over. Like,
that
come
was
on.
Terrible.
Yeah, it was horrible.
But they got, I mean, one, like, making television is difficult. Two, if you have had, 22 seasons of, like, this treasure chest of shit you
right.
use and you can't use any of it, like, that's really hard to write the same show without writing
right.
the same show.
I just did that.
Yeah.
I just
oh,
wrote
right.
a GT3
yeah, you did
review
do that.
The second time.
Yeah, it's hard. You know, I thought
the
Conversation Street was
fine. The
Road
and Track people said they liked it.
Like, once they started animating the Conversation Street, I think those are a little fun. And then it's just the guys talking about the news. But when you...
Well, that was one example yeah, yeah. of many.
Yeah, no, you're yeah. right. It's just, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know what it is.
Yeah,
or they lost it a little bit. But
well, everybody's got their fucking peak, right? You know what I mean? My favorite band, Pearl Jam, released their best studio album in like 1998.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Everyone's got their peak.
Yeah,
that's
true.
Singing's all right. Sean McGrew says, "Would you rather have a Chevy Beretta, a Ford Probe, or a Dodge Daytona?" That's a very good question.
Go ahead. Ford Probe.
I think
like the way it looks
if it could be the second gen Ford Probe,
yes.
and it could have the V6, because that V6 Do you know what that V6 is? That's the V6 that's from the Mazda Lantus down in New Zealand. It's like the good V6.
Oh, shit.
The KLZ V6
a good car.
Shared with Mazda.
I like that car.
Yeah, yeah. I'd rather have a Probe. But there's a guy who comes to Cars and Coffee in Malibu who's got a Daytona, like the end of the run Daytona, like maybe like a 93, but it's converted to rear-wheel drive with a 6.1 Hemi in it.
I mean, yeah, that's different.
It's awesome.
Of course. No,
it's
that's
awesome.
Very awesome.
Yeah.
But I think we're going stock for stock here.
Oh, no. It's not. It's completely outside of the
Beretta,
fucking question. I was just noting that there happens to be an awesome Daytona lurking.
I like when people can turn something, you know, kind of meh into something cool. The Beretta.
I haven't seen a clean, nice Beretta in a long fucking time. I mean, a really, really long time. And these things were everywhere in the early 90s. When I was a kid... Yeah. Dude, there were so many of these like front wheel drive V6 coupes like everywhere. You could, you know, you see those magazine comparison tests from fucking 20 years ago where it's like best sport coupe under $20,000 is a dozen cars.
Right, yeah, huge
you know
shootout.
What I mean?
Is this like a junior Monte Carlo?
Yeah.
Is it smaller than that? It looks like it's got the same little stock car spoiler.
I don't think they had a Monte Carlo at this time. There was the Lumina, the Beretta. They were really trying to do this European look thing where everything was curvy.
Mm-hmm.
It may have also been something because of Opel and Vauxhall at the same time. Maybe they were trying to do some global shit. But, God, these fucking Berettas were everywhere at the time. The Z26. Ooh, boy. All right.
Wow.
Moving on.
It's like a better looking Jetta.
Christian Byrne says, what's your usual ganja schedule? Schedule? All day, every day, bitch. I don't have a schedule. I smoke when I feel like smoking, which is fucking frequently, isn't it? It's pretty frequently, to be honest with you. A certain point, it stopped. You don't really even get high anymore. You're really just...
You can only run so fast.
Yeah. You're maxed. You're just peaked out. Yeah, plateau, like a torque curve, like a turbo torque curve.
Yeah, but you're like a car that has its own fuel truck next to it and is just piping fuel
right.
in.
Yeah, the sponsorship's been kind to me. I don't have to really conserve anymore. I'm just like throwing weed all over the place. Sean McGrew, what's your favorite AMC?
Eagle, baby.
Their cable network? AMC, I mean, AMCs are not, I'm not, the two-door Eagle.
Mm-hmm.
There's like a, they made like a two-door like safari car. Was it a Premier? What was it? Eagle? What the fuck was it? AMC Eagle. Was it an Eagle? Yeah, lifted Eagle. Yeah, that fucking thing. Yes. I mean, that is fuck. The Eagle SX/4 all-wheel drive liftback. That is what the fuck is up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the best
that's
AMC
a good time.
By far. By far. Oh, look at that one right there. Eagle Sport SX4. Look on the left, Zach. That this one. Yeah, with the fog, with the Hellas. Woo!
Yeah, that's a good 83 time.
83 AMC Eagle Sport SX4. Yeah, dude. That look. I mean, that really looks just like a Corolla of the same time period.
Very much so,
almost
yeah.
the same. But it's lifted 4x?
That's yeah, it's a little Mad Maxi.
Sick. Super sick.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Love it. Oh, that one down, the Camback is the one that is in the one I saw in LA. There's one that like looks like the Gremlin almost, but it's like safaried.
Let me see this thing.
Down, go to scroll. That one, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's
wow.
like a wagon.
It's a two-door wagon.
It's a
two-door.
It's a hatchback safari
it's a shooting
wagon.
Break.
Yeah.
It's a shooting brake.
So look at it in white. There's a rally car underneath it. That picture, yeah. Is that rally? What
no,
is
it's
that?
The same car with white walls, but it's just white
paint.
Oh,
it's not a rally. I think they're using it as like a logging vehicle in that.
Yeah,
that
it's got like a logo.
It's the logging company logo. You can tear down some trees with the new AMC Eagle, the SX4. Drive over the logs. Really fuck the forest right up. The new AMC Eagle. 4x4. Log burning. Wood burning. Coal burning. It's really fucking bad for the environment. Make you feel like a man. AMC.
Holds less than a truck, not as comfortable as a car. AMC Eagle. For the foreman who doesn't know what he wants to be.
For the foreman who doesn't like being called the F word. That's pretty much it.
I like these, man. I one day, Eagle with like serious off-road tires.
That's what you were going to say about the F-150 power boost.
What?
It's for the shop foreman that doesn't mind being called
Oh, right, because he got a hybrid. Yeah, yeah, they're like, nice hybrid. And he's like, yeah, you want to plug your drill into it again and go back to work again?
Yeah. Okay, next. Scouting for Zen. Like the newest videos. Thank you, sir. With rising new and used classic car prices, will more enthusiasts move to bikes? Dude, I don't think it's money that keep people in four wheels and off of two wheels. People are either into bikes or fucking terrified of motorcycles. There's not, I mean, I don't think it's the money issue. I mean, obviously, motorcycles, if you want to go really fast and get your adrenaline fucking pumping, are better value for money. And if you wanted to, like, collect something, you know, you could fit eight motorcycles in one parking space,
right.
You know what I mean? But, like, I've never met someone who's like, I can't afford cars, I'm going to go to bicycles, because it's, and I'm not saying that doesn't exist, but, like, it's not really, to me, in my experience, it's not about the money. It's about, I love riding motorcycles, or I am fucking terrified and will never get on a motorcycle.
Totally.
That's really what divides those two types of people.
I think everyone who's riding a motorcycle, everyone who wants to ride a motorcycle basically is. You know what I mean? Like, there's, I don't think there's a lot of people that are out in the wings going, I'd love to.
I mean, I think they could do a better job of getting new people on bikes. And I think that more people would enjoy it if they tried it. I don't think it's quite, I think it has an intimidating issue. And, like, people look at me, like, sneer at me on my Vespa, but, like, I'm having a great time. I think if more people rode scooters, life would be fucking cool.
They're very fun. It's just, I think most people go, motorcycles are dangerous, which they are.
Totally.
And so it keeps people away from it.
Totally.
And if your dream car is getting expensive, like, a motorcycle is very fast. You can go very fast for not a lot of money. You know, you can get an F-body Camaro for $4,000 and haul ass and be faster than plenty of things. So I don't think, like you said, the used car prices aren't pricing people out of cars where they go, I got to get around somehow. I guess I'll go to a motorcycle.
Yeah, yeah. And the last part of that question was for sensations and simplicity. I mean, motorcycles are getting very techy. I just rode a motorcycle that had adaptive cruise control, adaptive suspension, quick shifting, rev matching, keyless start. You know, it's going to happen to bikes too.
Mm-hmm. There were two of those at Newcombs the other day, like privately owned Ducatis.
Oh, yeah. 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 I'm getting the Harley Pan America that Brad Brownell was talking about. I get that on Monday.
Oh, cool.
I'm excited for that. Yeah, I'm going to ride that thing a bunch. So, yeah, I disagree with that sentiment. I think that bikes are a great alternative to cars if you're into bikes. And that factor is independent of your financial status, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah, well said.
Yeah. Sean says, best sounding V8 in your opinion? Nominates NASCAR race Hemis and the Voodoo engine from the Mustang. Best sounding V8? I mean,
I'm going to go Audi 4.2.
Audi RS4 4.2. There's mm-hmm. a good argument for that, especially as used in Spyker, which mm-hmm. is very short exhaust.
Yep.
Those are cool. The Ferrari 355's V8, I mean, is certainly,
yes.
I think, the best sounding V8 I've heard in a road car. That's pretty much the best thing I could come up with. 355 Ferrari. Yeah. What else you got?
We got more. I'm just adding the new ones.
All right.
So go to this one.
Sean likes the look of the 97 to 06 XK8 coupes, but are they bad cars? Not particularly. They're okay. There's a lot of Ford in them. They're not, as far as I know, like, they're not like horrible shit boxes or anything. At this point, they're old used cars. You know, they're not the kind of things that people really kept super, super, super mint. They're certainly not like appreciating assets. But they're not like horrible. I mean, if you like one, I got a uncle, not really an uncle, my mom's cousin collects Jaguars from the 90s. He seems to really like them. It's a weird thing to collect, but whatever.
They're nice looking.
Whatever makes you happy.
Yeah.
Gabe Delar Ira says, what strap should I get for a retro Bulova 2181 TV? Simple black leather. You can go rally strap. Rally strap is basically simple black leather, but it's got the holes in it for breathing. Gives you like a 70s vibe if you want to go rally strap. Yeah, let's see the Accutron 2181 TV. Oh, that's cool. Very cool. Rally strap. Go for the rally strap.
Yeah, that's a very 80s looking watch.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's super cool. I like that. Bulova Accutrons are very neat. They use this really funky movement. Favorite car from the 50s, Zach?
56 Chevy.
56 Chevy?
Beller, for sure.
Favorite 50s car, Mercedes 300 SL going. It's lovely.
Yeah.
It's very good. 1953, the shit. I'll take all of them. That counts. Michael Jerome says, what does a TST fan / tourist have to do for a quick visit? You can visit. Just send me an email at matt@thesmokingtire.com and we can arrange a visit for you. No problem. Wow, Sean is really just vomiting questions, and I appreciate your donations, but this guy's got a lot of questions. Thoughts on Dodge Aspen RTs and Plymouth Velar Roadrunners? I have no thoughts, Sean. I don't even think I know what that car looks
like.
Yeah,
I'm Googling both.
I have no idea what those are. I don't know anything really about muscle cars. That is ugly. No. That's like a Chevy, it's like a Vega. That's an ugly car.
It's like it looks a little bit like a Torino.
Yeah,
not as good.
I would say that's a pass.
What year is it? 77.
77?
Ooh, so
yeah,
it's going to be slow and heavy.
I would pass on, what's the Plymouth? Is it the same? Yeah, that's the same car. That's not a good looking car. No.
Oof.
That is a travesty. No, that's a hard pass, Sean. That's a pass for me, buddy. Not. Wow. Everything about that picture Zach has pulled up is misery. That's a misery photo. That house, that guy's shirt, that car, whatever the fuck his woman is doing back there.
I think she's going, you know, if you like it, then I like it. Because he's washing the car. And she's
to me,
like,
listen, Keith is a really nice guy and he said he wanted to share us both. Not just fuck me. That's a terrible looking car.
It's worse than white.
No. It's awful. It's real. No, let's move on. Bad. That's
really not good.
No, that's a hard no from me, Bob. Carl Vogel says gasoline will 100% eat through plastic. Thank you. Thank you for that. Quinn wants to know if we saw the Subaru 22B that sold on Bring a Trailer for $312,000.
Sure
I did. A couple factors contributed to that. One, that car was federalized. That's a 1998 car in the U.S. So that car went through show and display and is federalized before it's 25 years old. That heavily contributes to the price of something like that.
Because you can use it.
Because you can drive it legally in the United States right now. Additionally, dude, in the last 5 years, it's now 2021. It's 20 years since the WRX came out in America. We are now at the point where Subaru enthusiasts have grown up and gotten rich.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that happens. That kind of thing happens. And the 22B is the best, most iconic Subaru road car in history.
Uh-huh.
It's very rare. It's not just a package. It's a fucking homologation car for rallying.
I watched the videos of that and the P1 that Tiff Nadell did like many, 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 many times in a row.
Yeah. 22Bs are the famous shit. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are. And so I think that one had very low miles. I think it was in very good condition. I mean, it had all the right stuff. And it was federalized. So, I mean, you know, it's not the weirdest one I've seen. I mean, you know, I think, but
and they only made like 399 of them.
It's rare.
Like
it's very it's really it's rare. Very rare. Yeah. So I mean, it's hard to believe that it's a huge number for a Subaru. It really is. But we're not talking about Subarus anymore. We're talking about homologation race cars that really define, the cred of a whole brand. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That it really does, you know? You know, brand new fucking Foresters are sold on the credibility of Subaru's rally cars, you know? Yeah.
They made 400 in the world.
Globally, so.
So that's 10%, a little bit more than 10% of the number of like E30 M3s they brought here.
I think there's 575 LaFerraris.
Right. So that's how rare it is.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, the odds are you will never see one in your lifetime. That's how rare they are. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I'm impressed at the number, but I'm not horribly shocked. I mean, I almost could have seen it coming. You know what I mean? Not enough to buy one, but you know. But
absolutely, it kind of makes sense, even though you know it's a big number. But
yeah.
If E30s were selling or are selling for $80,000, and this is the car, right. This is the E30 of a younger generation.
Imagine the
fewer of them.
And imagine instead of the E30 M3s, there were only Sport Evo 2s. You know what I mean? There's no E30 regular M3.
Good point.
There's only the 325 and the Sport Evolution 2, of which they've only made 500.
Right, yeah.
And there's nothing in between.
Yeah, we didn't get the normal STI one.
Right,
right.
So you know, it's the game over if that's the thing, you know. Andrew Jackson wants to replace his Mark 7 GTI with a Civic Type R. Dealers have them at 5 to 12K ADM. Used ones seem to be at or above MSRP. I tried to tweet about Civic Type R's going for over MSRP, and I was immediately called out by people who correctly showed me search results for multiple, and I'm talking at least 4 or 5, Civic Type R limited editions in yellow on dealer lots for sticker price right now.
Wow.
$44,900 sticker price.
Cool.
So
just be willing to travel, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, sure, 5K over, or you buy a plane ticket for $200 and you drive it home.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's what I would do. So I would expand your search. National search. The dealers that had them were not in Los Angeles County.
Right.
They were in fucking Ohio, Nebraska. One was in like Montana. I mean, they're weird places.
Yeah.
Not weird, but like not hubs, let's
right,
just say.
Right.
I don't mean to call those places weird. They are not weird, but it's not prime Civic Type R market, let's just say. Last question. Nirup, recommendations for a Weiss field watch in terms of straps. I use the, I believe it's Shell Cordovan, whatever the Weiss comes with, I really like. It's like,
the leather one's nice. I like it.
I have my entire watch collection here, including my Weiss watch. And let me look at what it says on the back. I think it's from Weiss, so you can buy it on their website. And it is Cordura. That's what it's called, the Cordura strap. And it's just sold on Weiss's website. And it's got leather on the side that touches your hand, and then it's got a sort of a sailcloth, somewhere between a sailcloth and a canvas on the outside. And what's cool about it is you can actually clean it with like a toothbrush. Like if you wear it in the shower and mm-hmm. you bring an old toothbrush, you can just scrub there and you can clean it. Mine's actually pretty fucking dirty, to be honest with you. but that's my recommendation, honestly, is to get another strap from Weiss, because they come in different colors. They'll send you a different color, and they're good. All right.
Cool.
Well, that's a show.
That's a show.
Oh, wow. It was 90 minutes. Just flew on by, didn't it? What are we going to do for the rest of the day, Zach? You can edit a video?
I'm going to edit the F-150 video.
And then, like, should we
work out?
I'm going to work out, but should we go to the bar? Like, should we take these vaccines for a fucking roll?
Take a vaccine for a walk. That's
take
true.
Take them for a little
our
roll.
Bar's open now? I guess so, huh?
Well, I mean, you know, in Venice, yeah, you can. There's definitely bars open.
Yeah, let's do that.
Go to a bar.
I haven't been to a bar.
I've been to a
long,
bar.
Wow.
Really long.
Last
time.
Thing we last.
You know, your life is lame when fucking pandemic and pandemic being kind of over. It doesn't really change your life that much.
Yeah, no, it's very true. Like we work from home already.
Yeah,
yeah.
Although going into the indoor thing with Christian was that felt nice. I was ready to do that.
Mm-hmm. That was a good fun thing to do. That show is so good.
And again, I recommend recommended reading this week: The Basic Laws of Human Stupidity. International bestseller. It's fucking good, really. This is going to live at the shop and make everybody who comes through read that shit.
Yeah, that's good.
It's really good. That's our show. We are back.
We're going to be tomorrow with Tony
tomorrow.
Angelo.
No, Monday.
Nope.
Sunday.
Yep.
What time?
6:30 p.m.
Oh, Jesus. Okay. Sunday at 6:30 p.m., Tony Angelo from Motor Trend.
From Motor Trend.
And then Friday, we're going to have Henry Catchpole. It's going to be 10 a.m. Pacific. He's going to be calling in from the UK.
Cool.
And then do we want something in between? There might be something in between. I'm not really sure. But thank you for joining us, and enjoy the rest of your weekend. Come back tomorrow at 6:30 p.m. We'll see you then. Bye.